A few years ago, one of the kids in my online coaching program said to me, "Coach Rebecca, I wish we could just go to a gym and have you as our coach. We would all be so happy and so confident." And that warmed my heart, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, that would be the best." And that comment stuck with me for years. So now I'm going to do something about it. I am inviting gymnasts from all over the country to join me for the first ever Confident Gymnast Camp this August 3rd and 4th. This camp is all about breaking through mental blocks. So if you're struggling with a skill and you want me and my team to help you break through in real time, then check out confidentgymnast.com for details.
I was 5. That's when I started gymnastics. Right then, the coach said, "I want you on my preteen." I remember seeing gymnasts like Dominique Mocianu and the national team jackets and knew I want to own my own national team jacket. So I did gymnastics for a couple years. Then I tried out diving, but I didn't like it. So then I tried figure skating, but my parents couldn't afford figure skating. A rhythmic gymnastics gym had opened up. Fell in love with it right away. When I moved up to national team elite training, I moved to Chicago when I was 13, trained Monday through Saturday, 5 to 7 hours a day. Each practice, the rule was to get 2 clean routines per event before I could move on to the next. Sometimes that took me 20 routines, which I wasn't allowed to go home until I completed the plan, as we would call it. My coach in Texas, she was hard on us. She would make everybody sit in over splits for 10 minutes, and if anyone came out, she'd pause the time, she'd make us start over, she wouldn't let us get away with anything. I've definitely passed out while stretching too. I don't think you should be passing out from stretching. We've all seen those videos of Russian coaches sitting on children and the kids just bawling their eyes out. My method of coaching is to teach the kid how to properly sit in the stretch, where their legs should be, where their arms should be, where their head should be, and then I let gravity do a lot of the work.
Do you think that that's possible, that any kid can be flexible and can be fluid and learn to move their body in a beautiful way?
For sure. You just have to be willing to.
Hi guys, on today's podcast, I am interviewing Shelby McNamara, the founder of Flexibilities, a flexibility training program. And Shelby is an incredible multi-sport athlete who had a late start into rhythmic gymnastics, but knew she wanted to be on the national team and knew that she was going to get there. It's such an inspiring story of having an open mind to however your dream is going to manifest, and also how she's using her sport experience to create a healthy way to build flexibility. Here we go. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Perform Happy podcast. I am so excited to have my guest, Shelby McNamara, with me today, also known as Shelby Kissel, a former national team member of the U.S. Rhythmic Gymnastics team. She was a multi-sport athlete, all of the bendy sports, basically, and she now specializes in helping athletes get flexible for aesthetic sports. Welcome to the show, Shelby.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So where do we begin? What I love about your story is that you did not start rhythmic gymnastics at age 3 and then grind yourself to the bone. And then, you know, like you were able to sample a lot of sports as a younger athlete. Would you talk a little bit about your journey to the national team?
Sure. So whenever I was 5, I think that's when I started my first sport, which was a little after-school gymnastics program. And right then the coach came and said, "I want you on my preteen." And so I started preteen gymnastics at 5, 6 years old. And I remember seeing gymnasts like Dominique Mocianu and the national team jackets. And I right away then knew, like, I want to be that someday. I want to own my own national team jacket. And so I did gymnastics for a couple years. Then I tried out diving. So that was it's in line with gymnastics because you have to have a lot of spatial awareness and you flip and then have to land in the water straight. So I was good at diving, but I didn't like it because it didn't include the aesthetic aspect to sports. There was no dance, no music. It was just kind of straightforward and very technical. So then I tried figure skating, and I love figure skating, but my parents couldn't afford figure skating. So they told me, well, you can either skate or you can do gymnastics competitively. And at that point in time, a rhythmic gymnastics gym had opened up about 10 minutes away from my home in Texas. And I said, I'll try it. So I went to the rhythmic gym, fell in love with it right away. I quit skating and started gymnastics full time. And for those of you who don't know, rhythmic gymnastics is the gymnastics where you use a ribbon, a hula hoop, a ball, and then the clubs. There are four events. There used to be five, but now there are just four events, and you have to compete one routine in each event.
Awesome. Well, and I love that it's a great example of you can really cross train through trying other sports. And there's this misconception that you have to specialize so early. But if you have the training in these other sports, these other things that you've tried, you can apply that and then find what your heart really is into rather than, oh, well, I have to be a diver because I'm pretty good at this, even though it doesn't make my heart sing. But you kept kind of finding what you wanted to find. And then what age were you when you went all in on rhythmic?
I was 11. I had just turned 11 when I started rhythmic full time.
Yeah, which is like geriatric, right? To start a new sport, especially these.
When I first started, I lacked coordination and I could not throw anything in the air and catch it again. So the coach looked at me and said, "Wow, you're very, very talented, but you're going to have to work really hard to catch up on all these years that you've missed out on the fundamentals of rhythmic gymnastics." So she'd have me come an hour early and then just give me things to do. And she would check in with me and say, "All right, did you complete 50 reps of this and 50 reps of that?" And so I put in extra training just to get up to speed. But once I got there, it was soaring onto the national team.
Wow. I mean, so incredible. Now, what was the difference? I mean, obviously, it's a big difference between training at the club level and then training on the national team. What were the things that you noticed were like kind of the biggest changes when you stepped up to that level of training?
So at the club level, I was working usually 4 to 4.5 hours a day, 5 days a week. And then when I moved up to national team elite training, I moved to a new coach. My coach in Houston actually wanted me to have a new coach, like a national team coach, and told me that for my best interest, I should move. So I moved to Chicago when I was 13, and I started working with a team of national team coaches. And I trained Monday through Saturday, usually 5 to 7 hours a day. So each practice, I would take an hour to warm up, to do conditioning exercises. Sometimes there was 30 minutes to an hour of ballet included in my training. Then I would do 30 minutes of drills, kind of like warming up my leaps, my balances, my elements that go into the routine, but without apparatus handling. Then I would start my routines, and the rule was to get two clean routines per event before I could move on to the next. And sometimes that took me 20 routines to complete before I got too clean. But pretty much, I wasn't allowed to go home until I completed the plan, as we would call it. Then, after I completed all the routines, so 8 clean routines in total, I would go back and practice individual skills again from the routines, like tosses and balances and just things that needed extra training. And usually I'd have to do 10 good ones and then go show the coach. And then if I messed it up, I'd have to go redo 10 more and just lots of repetition. And by then, that was about the end of practice. And then I would take the train back home.
Wow. Okay, now those days where it took you 20,
It
what was the mental experience like when you are on, 15 and you haven't done a clean one? What was happening in your mind during those moments?
So there's definitely, I was a very emotional athlete and I would get frustrated with myself. And my coaches also made it a rule where I wasn't allowed to stop a routine if I made a mistake. So even though I knew the routine was not going to count, I still had to finish it. And I couldn't just throw in the towel and do a bad routine. Like I had to try to complete it well because that's how it is in competition. You always are going to be thrown a curveball and you have to learn how to recover and not just let it ruin the whole routine. But there were days when I was just so exhausted, very tired. I didn't feel like completing the routine. It was hard, but I think it just became such a routine where I knew mentally, like, I wasn't going to be allowed to go home until I finished it. I would just do the best I could. And my coaches were also very encouraging. Sometimes they would say, like, oh, go take a 5 minute break, and then let's continue. But then there are other days where I would actually react to it with more humor. Like I don't know. It was like that's sometimes my coping mechanism is to just laugh at myself and the fact that I was on routine 15 and still messing up. And it was like, all right, let's see if Shelby can do this routine. Like, here we go. So it kind of became a game also, like, it's just it wasn't always like tears and drama. It could be funny at times too, but the end goal was just to get the job done.
Yeah, well, I think that that's a great example of finding happiness in life. Where sometimes in life, grown-ups beyond sport, we may feel like I am at routine 15 here and have nothing to show for it. As a business owner, I can relate to that. I'm sure you can too, where you're like, wow, I am just slogging through. And what are we doing here? Can we get a win? Please, just any win would be really great. But that training that you have to just keep going, maybe cry a little, maybe laugh a little, maybe take a break. But ultimately, you kept going and you finished. And you were able to walk away at the end of each day and go, whew, okay, that was crazy. Got through that. What's for dinner? I mean, what an amazing skill as an athlete to go, like, we're going to try to keep the drama to a minimum during this challenge that we're facing, and then come back and do it again tomorrow. I mean, and what kept you going? What was it that kept you showing up?
I think I just genuinely loved the sport so much and I loved performing. I enjoyed putting my own personality into the routines, which is, I think, one of the things that rhythmic lets athletes do is really include your own personal style and expression through music, through body movement. And then you have all the technical skills that have to be included. But there's a lot of personalization that goes into the routines, and I just loved it. I couldn't imagine myself doing anything else at the time, and I really enjoyed just being in that atmosphere every day. And I think what kept me going was just the ultimate goal of competing well, representing Team USA well, staying on national team. And I'm a perfectionist. I always want to show my best, do my best. So I knew that in order to get there, I just had to put my head down and get through the work.
Hey guys, quick announcement break. Right now, we at Complete Performance Coaching are looking for 5 athletes who are ready to break through their mental blocks for good. If that sounds like you or your child, then sign up for a free consultation call with one of my amazing coaches as soon as possible to see if you're a good fit for our Perform Happy Elite training program. This program includes one-on-one coaching with the world's top mental performance coaches, plus tons of support for athletes and their parents in between sessions. You can sign up today at completeperformancecoaching.com/consult. Talk to you soon.
That's great. So I'd love to talk about the actual flexibility training. Now, just a little background. So I was a gymnast. I still have back pain. I still have hip pain. I have, you know, some of the fallout from, I would say, improper flexibility training. I think there were a lot of things that were done wrong. There was not a lot of consent when I was training as a gymnast. It was like you were getting pushed in your splits. Someone was cranking that leg up. You were getting sat on. You were like yelling, screaming. And they're like, this is just the way it is. Get used to it. And then I became the coach who would yank on a leg and sit on the splits and be like, get over it. And now, you know, I look back and go, oh, hi, that was abusive. That was abusive. There was no consent. There were kids yelling, stop. And I was not stopping. And it was the same with me. And it just like breaks my heart. So I'd love to know, like, was that happening to you on national team? And how are you hoping that that evolves from that place?
So the funny thing is my coaches, once I was on national team and I was working with the coaches in Chicago, they never stretched us. They just expected us to be flexible, which was an interesting thing. Like they would come into the gym and they'd say, why are you still stretching? Get to work. And then, so it was a little confusing, but prior to that, my coach in Texas, she was a really nice lady, but she was hard on us. She would make everybody sit in over splits for 10 minutes. And if anyone came out, she'd pause the time, she'd make us start over, and she wouldn't let us get away with anything. So I learned that stretching and discipline through her prior to moving. And once I moved, I was already really flexible. So there wasn't necessarily more flexibility that I needed to achieve. It was mostly about maintaining the flexibility I had already gotten and then improve my strength and smooth everything out. So that's what my coaches in Chicago were mostly focused on, was not pushing me down in splits so much, but more of, let's get a clean routine out of Shelby.
Yeah, you were already at the place where there was no additional training necessary.
I did work with a contortionist coach. He was incredible, super nice guy. He was the one who really brought my flexibility training to that next level. And he worked with my coach in Houston. But I would only meet with this flexibility coach maybe twice a year. He would come in and do a flexibility clinic. And then I would do one private lesson with him. And he would give me a list of maybe 5 to 6 stretches to do on my own daily that would help improve things like my splits and my back flexibility. So I would come into practice every day. I would do his list of stretches on my own, and then I would start practice with the rest of the team.
Right.
So that's how I really didn't have that terrible experience of being shoved into splits and painful positions. I had coaches that did push me and help me get into these difficult positions, I've definitely passed out while stretching too, multiple times, which was interesting. And I don't like it. I don't think you should be passing out from stretching, but my coaches weren't mean or yelling at me. It was more of like, it was consensual. Like I was like, okay, I'm about to do this. You just need to relax and let me stretch you. And then I was fine with it because I knew it was what I needed in order to get better.
Okay, that makes sense. And I think that's the critical difference is that, like, I was very flexible and I was like, bring on the oversplits. I'm going to show off. I'm like, but not my back. But so there were certain points that I was like, yeah, let's do that. Okay. But then I think that there's got to be some mindfulness about the consent piece and any time that you are potentially inflicting pain on another human, just as like a general.
When I coach, I mean, we've all seen those videos of Russian coaches sitting on children and the kids just bawling their eyes out, or the little Chinese kid that's being pretty much abused. And that, personally, I do not coach that way. I use, at first, my method of coaching is to teach the kid how to properly sit in the stretch, where their legs should be, where their arms should be, where their head should be. And then I let gravity do a lot of the work, or I show them how to pull themselves down. And then once they've got that piece of it down, once they have the technique correct, I will come in and sometimes use light pressure. Like if I'm teaching an in-person stretch lesson, I'll come and gently push on their leg or reposition their body so that it's correct, but I don't just put my full weight sitting on them because I don't think it's safe. I think it can be too much. I mean, and there are times where I have made children cry, but I know that it's not because I'm necessarily like pushing too hard. Sometimes it's just they're a little emotional that day. And so they trust me, and I can really help them, and they'll get through it, and they'll be like, oh, it wasn't that bad. Like it's okay. So, but yeah, I don't like pushing kids down and making them do super aggressive stretches, especially right away. I think it takes time to work up to that point, and that's part of the preserving the body for the future, so that we're not ruining these young bodies at a young age. We want them to grow into it and develop over time instead of making it happen overnight.
Absolutely. And that's something that I really love about your content that you put out is you can see it's about these little milestones and these little ways to support the full picture. It seems like, it's not just the flexibility. You're building strength in key ways. You're building movement. And it's like I remember you had started into a physical therapy path and decided that wasn't for you. And I always think about PT as like the slowest gratification thing you can do. You're like, really, I'm supposed to do this little weird thing for how long? And then am I even feeling any better? And then you look back 6 months later and go, oh, I'm not in pain anymore. I guess it worked. It's like with anything where you have to just do little consistent adjustments, little consistent changes, it's such a great discipline. It's such a great way to build discipline to be working through these little minute exercises, these little changes, these little motions that then over time create huge change. Is that by design? Is that kind of your plan with how you deliver your courses?
Yes, it is. I gradually introduce stretches and kind of work up from level one, which is how I design the website, is you have level one flexibility, and then you can work up to level five, which is your extreme contortionist level flexibility. But I introduce exercises, I start from the basics, I teach the fundamentals and the correct way to sit in a split, for example. And then from there, we just build on it. And I've had several young athletes do my online program who started with, they weren't necessarily like unflexible, but I think all they had was their split on the ground and maybe a back bend. But over time, over the course of 1 year, they've transformed their flexibility and they look so long and elegant now and so flexible. And it's neat to see these kids putting in the work 4 to 5 times a week. I tell them, do one video each day, stay consistent. You don't need to be stretching for 45 minutes plus, 30 minutes is good, but do it once a day and watch yourself transform over a year. Because a lot of people will think, oh, I need to stretch for 2 hours, sit in splits for 30 minutes, and then they don't see results in a week and they say, oh, well, it's not worth it. I don't see any change. But again, it's little by little. You have to put in the work each day. And then at the end of 6 months to a year, look back and you'll see how much you've changed.
Yeah, I remember when I went back to coaching, I was like, I'm gonna get my splits back. I hadn't done them in 5 years, and I was like, I'm getting my splits back. So every day I would warm up the kids, and I'd stretch with them, and then, over a couple of months, I'm like, oh, okay, what else can I do? Now, what about for the kids who are so tight? Like, they are just little muscle powerhouses. They're so strong. But dang it, if they can even get their shoulder angle open, or like, wow, the like splits are so hard. Is there hope for that kid?
Yes, I have seen it. When they first start doing my stretches, it's a little bit shocking for them. They go, oh my gosh, I can't even get into the position that you're asking me to get into. But I just help walk them through it, stay positive and just keep encouraging them to put in a little bit of work each day. And I've seen these little muscular powerhouse kids get to the point where they're saying, oh, I'm comfortable now. I'm not in pain when I'm sitting in a mini over split or doing a back bend. Like I can actually move now. So I think helping them to learn not just flexibility, but almost a flow with their body, like learning how to move in more of a wavy motion and not a choppy, like stick figure. You want to teach, that's a lot of things that are taught in rhythmic are body waves. And it's like moving your body in like a ripple like effect. And rhythmic gymnasts make it look so easy, but it's a very difficult skill to learn is how to move your body in unison, but make it look wavy and what's the word?
Fluid.
Fluid. So
Yeah.
I think
Great. That's
yeah,
exciting
so
to know.
combining that flexibility with these body wave movements really helps I mean anybody, but especially the strong muscular powerhouse gymnasts.
I think something I really talk about a lot is growth mindset and believing that whatever your starting point is what it is, and from there with effort you can kind of create anything. But you don't have to be naturally the most flexible person to be able to achieve flexibility. You don't have to be the strongest to achieve strength. You don't have to be the most talented. It's the kid who just is willing to do those 20 routines a day per event. That's the kid who's going to really make anything happen. That's my belief. Do you think that that's possible, that with the right effort, that any kid can be flexible and can be fluid and can learn to move their body in a beautiful way?
For sure, you just have to be willing to put in the effort and do the work. And I've seen kids who do have that innately where they just want to put in the work. And then I see kids where it looks like their parents are more forcing them to do it, and so they're not as into it. But over time, I've seen kids learn to love it, or they, you know, there are ways to work with kids who don't like stretching and to kind of try to make it fun for them. One of my things is when I teach lessons, I keep them chatting a little bit. I don't constantly tell them, be quiet, silence, I don't want to hear anything. I let them tell me stories. I let them talk, and then it just makes it helps them to relax and to, you know, take their mind off of the pain of trying to sit in a split for 2 minutes. And that way it's a more fun lesson, because it's supposed to help them with their main sport. It's not supposed to be this hour of strict, like, drill sergeant flexibility training. So I do try to make it fun for these kids, and that way they're enjoying it. They're enjoying the process and not dreading it.
I'm like flashing back to my coach being like, no talking, hands on the
Oh.
mat. I'm like, ah, we're all like, he's like the kids crying and the so okay, if you could give a word to the coaches out there who want their kids to have that length and that flexibility, and they want to make it fun, but then not make it so the kids aren't trying. I mean, do you have any kind of middle ground where you can like really help kids to find the excellence and the technique, but also not making it totally miserable?
So whenever I teach, it's a little different when you're teaching a private lesson versus a group of children. And so when I teach group classes, I stand up there and I'm doing it with them. I'm leading it. I'm showing it, not all the time full out, but sometimes if I see someone doing it incorrectly, like, I don't yell at them. I make a joke. I'm like, why? You know, are you lifting your leg? You look like a dog peeing on a bush. Like, and then they all laugh. Like, they think it's funny. And then I'll show, but like, I want to see this with your arm. I want you to lead this way. And I think when I make it fun and lighthearted, and I'm not yelling at the kid, telling them how bad they are, I point out the mistake, but it's not in a hurtful way. And then I show the correct way. I think it, and then they join me. They follow along. And then when they sit in oversplits, I think I always tell them, I say, you can talk to each other as long as you're correctly in the split. But if you're not in it correctly, you can't talk. You're not allowed.
Okay, that's a great little deal.
So because I understand that sitting there for 2 minutes in an oversplit is difficult. So I say, talk to each other. I am fine with that. Just sit in it correctly. And sometimes they'll want to, you know, chat, get chatty while we're doing exercises. And then I tell them, hey, no talking right now. Wait till we get to oversplit. Then you can talk. So I give them little milestones. And I say, when I'm talking, whenever I'm counting, I don't want to hear a word from anybody. So, but there are moments where it's like super hard work, and then, okay, we're sitting in split. You can kind of chill out and chat for 5 minutes. So that's how I manage classes, or, you know, team practices. I know it's different when you're working on a very specific thing like stretch. And then whenever I was training, my coaches didn't necessarily tell me that I wasn't allowed to talk. If they saw me talking too much during practice, they would usually say, like, hey, stop talking so much. Get back to work. Like, you two separate. So, but it was more of a, I don't know, for my coaches, they knew I was a hard worker, and so they weren't too harsh on me. But I do understand when you do have that one kid that just talks all the time, and you have to kind of come down a little harder on them. But sometimes it's needed. But I think for the most part, letting them enjoy the sport instead of making it feel like, some prison camp.
Totally.
So.
Yeah. Well, and I'd love to wrap up with, tips for the kid who really wants to increase their flexibility. What are some, maybe a few things that you would recommend that they add into their day? If they're just like, okay, I want a couple things to just start to get more flexible on my own, what would be your kind of top tips for them?
So I usually break up the body into, see, like three main categories. So you have your legs, your hamstrings, you have your hips, and then you have your back. And so I usually start with hamstrings. We do a lot of pike stretches, but instead of just leaning forward into a pike and holding it, try standing up and then stand up into the pike, grab your feet, pull yourself in towards your legs, and then sit back down. And then do that again over and over. So you're moving the body. So it's more of an active stretch and you're not just sitting and holding the whole time. Holds are good, but to get the body warmed up, I like to add more movement into the stretch. So standing pikes, another stretch, lunges, getting ready for. I always do lunges before we go to splits and over splits. And I always tell my students to make sure that you're pressing or you're allowing your hips to sink down into the lunge and that you're not holding yourself up and tensing up your body. You want to relax, but also, of course, stay in the position. And then, of course, splits. I recommend if you're trying to get your split flat on the ground, don't just practice splits on the ground all the time. Even if your split is not all the way down, go ahead and grab a yoga block or a pillow and place that underneath your front leg and underneath your heel. Then sit in your split. So now it's a miniature over split. And just practice lifting your chest up and letting gravity pull you down. And start by holding that position for 1 minute and then work your way up to 2 to 3 minutes. But that's a really good stretch to add into your daily routine. And then there's back, which includes there's three parts of the back. You have your upper, your middle, and your lower back. And I try to incorporate all three of those parts of the back because a lot of us tend to use our lower back, and that's why a lot of gymnasts will end up with lower back pain. So I'm always trying to incorporate that upper and middle back too, so it's not just low back, low back, low back every day. So things that you can do to stretch out your back bends. When you're in a back bend, you can gently rock back and forth. When you rock back towards your hands, you're naturally stretching your shoulders and your upper back more. That's a really good one. And then other things, it's hard to explain on a podcast, but I call them body waves. And it's basically a sequence of bends that you go through your upper back, and then your middle back, and then your lower back, and then you're constantly moving your arms. And that's one of my favorite ways to warm up the body because it kind of taps into a thing called muscle or it's nerve flossing. It's a technique in physical therapy that helps to activate your nervous system, helps to loosen up your hamstrings. And so the body waves and rhythmic is like a form of nerve flossing. So activating the nervous system and warming up the body gently instead of throwing yourself straight away into a back bend or a back handspring. I think that's too harsh to do right away. So you really want to warm up the body before going all the way into those deeper stretches and skills.
Yes. Well, fabulous job doing that with, without being able to demonstrate. Now, I know you have tons of free resources. Also, you have your program. Would you tell us if somebody's like, Shelby, I need your help, where do they find you?
So you can find me on my website. It's called flexibilities.com. And there it's an unlimited subscription. So you sign up and it's $10 a month to join. I usually post a brand new stretch routine every single week. And there you have unlimited access to all my stretch routines. And you can I usually for beginners or people who are new to the website, I recommend going through the Flexibilities Pro section because that takes you through the beginning and works your way up. But you can also go to the full body stretch routines or work focus on legs or focus on the back or focus on your knees and toe point. There's a section that's just for shoulders. So there's a lot to choose from. It's a little overwhelming when you first sign up, but there's so much to choose from, and you'll be able to create a little stretching plan for yourself. I just tell everyone, practice one routine once a day, 4 to 5 times a week, and then stick to it. And then I also have a YouTube channel that's called Flexibilities, and this is where I post mini versions of my stretch routines. And then I'm also on Instagram at shelby.flexibilities.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for what you're doing to keep these little bodies healthy and moving. Thank you for your time. It's been great to get to know you.
You so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode of the Perform Happy Podcast. If you're ready to unlock your maximum sport potential, head over to performhappy.com and join us. You'll be training alongside world champion athletes and Olympic hopefuls. And I will personally take you through my research-based system for overcoming fear and mental blocks, building confidence, and finding your flow. I'm Coach Rebecca Smith, and I'll see you next time.